Hey, you're listening to The OK Show, brought to you by The Current. I'm your host, Andrea Swenson, and this is the podcast where real musicians talk about their real lives. This week's guest has spent the past 6 years performing around the Twin Cities and Zoo Animal. She recently left the group to explore life as a solo artist. Her name is Holly Hansen. Yeah. This is a special show for me because I have been following Holly Hansen's career, interviewing Holly, and listening to her music for almost the entire time that I've worked as a full-time journalist in the Twin Cities. I've probably seen Zoo Animal perform about a dozen times, and I never saw Holly and her band give less than 100% on stage. Zoo Animal played like something massive was at stake, and in its earliest days, there definitely was something massive. Zoo Animal were one of the only bands that I can recall from recent Minnesota music history who openly identified as Christians and made music that explicitly talked about Jesus and God, but who defied the categorization of Christian rock. It's one of the first things I remember talking to Holly about when I interviewed her for the first time back in 2009. She didn't want to talk about religion in that interview because she was leery of being limited to that Christian rock genre. But a closer read of the lyrics on her debut album, Young Blood, hint at an even more complex backstory. Even though Holly had embraced Christianity up until that point, she was grappling with how the Bible verses she'd studied could be applied to her evolving identity. And she was wondering what it meant that her adult life and her religious beliefs were starting to split and go down different paths. Back then, Holly was in her early 20s and about to be married for the first time. As many of us can attest, myself included, we learn a lot about ourselves in our mid-20s, and sometimes it can feel like you're coming out on the other end of that transition period as an entirely different person. Holly wrote a blog post about a year ago now that explained just how enormous her transition into her late 20s ended up being. "I made a heavy decision in 2012," she wrote. "It wasn't to get a divorce. It wasn't to come out. It wasn't to admit I wasn't a Christian. It wasn't to pursue the one I love. Though that all happened, it really was just one decision, to be honest." When Zoo Animal announced that they were disbanding, it seemed like an excellent time to catch up with Holly for an in-depth chat about everything she's been through and everything she's about to do next. We ended up talking for quite a long time, and what follows are the highlights from our conversation. Hi, Holly.
Hello.
Thanks for coming over to my house.
My pleasure.
And for agreeing to do the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, big year for Zoo Animal in 2015. I mean, the big question I know that's on everyone's mind and maybe where we should begin is just, why now? Why did Zoo Animal have to end?
I have this thing that happens to me where I have a gut feeling and then I do it. And then after it's over, I can understand better why it had to happen like that and why maybe so fast.
Mm.
And I think even with Zoo Animal, I'm still somewhat understanding why I had to finish it, because even like the band played in Duluth, I don't know, maybe a month before our last show, and I still wasn't sure. And so it was maybe a couple days after that, and I let the band know, like, I think this show at Amsterdam is going to be our last show. For me, the band and the name Zoo Animal and all of those songs are wrapped up in all of these things that were me when I was in my early 20s. And I've changed so much. The world has changed so much. And I just wasn't feeling motivated to write every time I thought about Zoo Animal.
Mm.
And then I realized that part of my writing block was simply because I kept feeling like everything I wrote would have to be a Zoo Animal song. And I was like feeling almost resentful of that. Like, but what if I don't want to write a four-piece rock band song?
Right.
Like, what if I want to do something weirder? And what if I want to create something alone in my bedroom for a year before I have to play it out live?
Right.
I need to go back to this space where music is like a little playground. And I'm kind of a business-minded person naturally. Like, I actually like that. I love bookkeeping. I love spreadsheets. And I think I got to a point, it was like, I need to make a living at this so I can make music. Like, I can't be what I want to be until I'm making a living so that I can focus all my time on it and do right. as good of a job as I want to. And then while I was trying to become that thing, I forgot to keep writing. I forgot to keep caring about what I was doing. It just hit me. I'm like, I have to stop pushing this.
Yeah.
I just have to stop pushing this because I love what has happened, but I'm not interested in pushing this anymore. And it essentially was like that came to my mind. And then like an hour later, I wrote my bandmates and then I was like, okay, this is going to be the last show.
People cared.
They did
that
care.
That last show was amazing. I mean, a full house of people that obviously were really familiar with the music and kind of felt like the end of a movie. I think I tweeted that.
Yeah. It feels like felt like to me, your tweet, I was like, that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, where everyone comes back together for like one last party or whatever. Mm-hmm.
And it's sad, but you're also totally kind of ready.
So I'm thinking about the first time that I met you. And one thing that you're really struggling with at that time was being kind of pigeonholed as a Christian rock band. Mm-hmm. You had talked about your faith a little bit in an interview, and then it kind of started becoming like a thing that people associated with Zoo Animal. And now fast forward all these years later, and I know that's something that you're still thinking about a lot is your relationship with your religion and your background. Can you just tell me a little bit, I guess, about your upbringing and where that enters into your life and how that started kind of entering into your art?
Mm-hmm. My upbringing was very Christian. I loved it. I mean, to have passion and also to really like, you know, intellectual pursuits, not by any means saying I'm smart, but loving to study philosophy. If you live in a small town, really the only outlet for that is like, oh, I can go to a Bible study.
Mm.
And it's like an emotional connection and it's a mental connection. And it turns into this really beautiful, like, coming togetherness of who you are. Because there's something you can study where you can have all of these things relating to it. And you don't have to be embarrassed about being passionate or extremely interested in something. Growing up, it was a big part of my life. And I always was sort of a bit of a dissonant note in that community because I didn't always like the way certain things were talked about, especially in living in a small town and being someone who always had an artistic bent. That's just not very common in a small town in Minnesota.
Right.
I think maybe more so now because of the internet, but back then the internet was still pretty new. I mean, I didn't have a smartphone or anything in high school. My mom and I are very close and we have the kind of relationship where we would talk. You know, Saturday morning comes and she's got these two chairs in her dining room that she sits in and does her devotional. And I would come join her and then we'd just talk for like it's not uncommon as 3 hours go by and we're still talking about what it means that the stone was rolled away and it was three women.
Mm.
You know, like just very specific things like that. So Christianity taught me to think and to care about why I'm alive. But as time went by, I realized I'm a Christian because my family's a Christian. And it started to not line up with my values. And it's not that I wasn't aware. It's just that I really was in love with this idea of there's somebody I can constantly talk to. These days, I'm like, I can't believe I thought. I mean, if I also love Christians, and I think it's totally reasonable to have a faith like that. But it came to a point where I was like, I can't believe I think I can talk to the person who made the world. And that I have an actual, like, I can just sit on my porch and talk to this person. But when I did think that, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And it was very inspiring. But it just really came to the point where it was like, I don't actually believe that. And so when I do it, I feel like a fool. I'm not like a vengeful ex-Christian or something who, I do see some of the harm that the entity that it is has done. But as far as having belief, I think that can be a very good thing too. I just don't have it. Falling, cause I'm black and I'm childless. Cause I'm black and I'm childless.
So at what point in your experiences with Christianity did music enter in?
I don't remember a time I didn't like music. I was in a musical when I was a paid actress in a musical when I was in second grade.
Wow.
So I always felt like a singer. And then in fifth grade, I took up upright bass. And then cool. In sixth grade, I decided to be a percussionist. And then I also decided that I should get a guitar, which I learned on my own. I did play percussion at school for like a few years. I'm like that typical story of a kid. I annoyed my sisters because I'd be in the car making noises, you know, and not realizing that I was being annoying. And then they're like, Holly. I'm like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize. I've been tapping on that for so long. So I don't know if there's like a very distinct time, but I know when I got that guitar and I realized I can write music. But it never occurred to me like, oh, go find tabs and play the tabs and the chords. I just was like, I can use this and make stuff with it.
Wow, instantly.
And I think I kind of stunted myself in a way because I didn't push myself because I just used the tools I found on my own. And I think I'm actually, that's what's happening to me now is I'm saying, my language is so limited. I need to just stop playing out and sit in my little musical space and learn to play better.
Yeah.
So that I'm actually interested in what I'm playing, you know. I'm like, oh, wow, that's a new thing I have never done before. My parents were always performers with acting. And so performance was always something that was like second nature and just like, oh, yeah, my parents go do a comedy act sometimes and we have a babysitter. That's totally normal, you know. And it wasn't until I moved to Hokkaido that I was like, that's really interesting that my parents worked at a theme park. Or, you know, like, that's not normal.
Yeah. Do you remember what you wrote your first song about?
Pretty sure it was my mom.
Oh, cute. Yeah.
My mom is one of my best friends, and I think she always has been. So, and my dad, he left when I was 8. So I think anybody who has that situation, you've got like this, we're in this together, mom, even though you don't really know what that means when you're that young.
Right. When I listen back to the earliest Zoo Animal songs, what's really interesting to me is that you were singing about religion, but you were singing from a standpoint of someone that was highly skeptical and wondering what this all meant and what it meant for your identity and your life. And I'm wondering, did the questioning start before that, or was the music a way for you to kind of grapple with this stuff?
I think if it started any time before that, I wasn't aware of it.
Mm.
And the music was sort of me admitting it to myself. I think the first couple, Zoo Animal, no, all three of them, are me admitting things to myself. Writing them down, singing them, and then maybe a year after I write it, I'm like, wow, that's what I was thinking. And it's almost like I don't even realize it in the time that it's happening. And then I like look back and I'm like, whoa. That's why that was happening in that way, and oh, I get it now.
Wow.
I think that's maybe why I felt like I had to stop having Zoo Animal, because I feel like Zoo Animal was all about not knowing myself and like being super, in a way, like angry because I felt stuck. And so it's like Youngblood was me finally admitting that I was questioning things, and almost like some of the lyrics were halfway sarcastic. Like things I would say that a Christian would say, like, I know the song My Lord is like pretty darn like in your face. If you listen to the lyrics, like,
yeah,
you'll be scared when my Lord comes down is literally what I say. And I think in a way I was being like, do you realize this is what you're saying if you say this is true?
Mm.
And then just play it to like a disco beat, whatever.
So you were married when Zoo Animal kind of broke out.
Yeah. I wasn't married when Young Blood came out, but I know when I repressed it, I was, because I had to change the last name.
Oh, okay. I bring that up because you're not married any longer.
True.
That was one of the changes that has happened. And I think there's some themes on that level as well in both that debut record and self-titled of this kind of questioning of, is this right? Is, like, I think about a song like Worker Bee, or is that what the title of that track is?
Yes, it
okay. is. Okay. where you're kind of examining your life and the mundane qualities of it and wondering, like, is this really what I was, you know, mm-hmm. signing up for and what I want? And kind of thinking about how you were talking about, you know, maybe you were writing things that you hadn't even quite realized yet. Was that having an impact on people in your life, that you were saying these things in your lyrics that could impact your relationship?
You know, sometimes I sometimes think I would write things in songs to see if I could get a reaction out of people, but no one ever said anything. You know, and I think because a lot of songwriters are not speaking, they sing like it's first person,
mm-hmm.
but maybe it's not, because they're trying to be in someone else's shoes. And I think sometimes people just assume that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people would ask me and I would tell them that it wasn't first person because I didn't want to deal with what that would mean.
Yeah.
So I don't really know if I ever like had someone close to me like talk to me about my lyrics in a way that was like, hey, is this going on for real?
Right.
You know, I don't think anyone ever did that really.
Yeah.
I had people, you know, wow, departure is kind of like dark or whatever.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, are you okay? It was just like, wow, that's kind of interesting subject. It's very Minnesotan, you know?
That's interesting. Oh, that's
yeah,
different.
Exactly. That's interesting. Yeah.
That means it freaked me out.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you what I really think.
Yeah. So where in the process of starting to kind of question things did you start to question your sexuality?
Well, the thing about questioning that is I knew that was a part of me since I can remember, but it was if it was right or not.
Ah.
Honestly, if you listen back, knowing that that was something that I was dealing with, almost every song has something about that. And like, in you know, it's one of those things, I think these days, maybe children and teenagers would be more likely to express that to someone they trusted, but I never told anyone. That was not, no way, you know, because that changes everything for everyone.
Yeah.
And because I literally thought it was wrong. I actually thought it was wrong growing up because I read the Bible quite literally. At one point I was a straight up Calvinist who, it wasn't about admitting that that's something that was a part of me. It was admitting that it was okay.
Mm.
My ex-husband is a great person, and the fact that we still know each other and that we still talk, and like I want the best for him, he wants the best for me, but the fact that he had to go through this whole thing with somebody, I just am like, I'm so sorry, but also thanks for doing as best as you could have.
Yeah.
And you know, also I'm not a binary person anyways, so it's not that I'm like a lesbian or whatever. I just don't have a line. Growing up where I grew up, I didn't even know the language. I didn't even know how to talk about it. I didn't even know. And in this weird way too, though, I'm kind of glad that when I came out, I was already in love and I've just been with her and I'll be with her. That's just how it is. So
yeah.
Also, because of what happened with being pigeonholed as a Christian, I was even worried about being public about it because I didn't want to become a spokesperson for that either.
I see.
So that was kind of a weird decision that my partner and I came together to decide, like, should you even do that? I also am, like, very conscious that I want to keep communication open with Christians.
Right.
I want to keep communication open with people who think my lifestyle is wrong because I want to learn. I want to know why they think that.
Yeah.
Not because I want to tear them down, but because I want to understand them. And so I'm very careful to be like, here's what I think, here's why, and if you're not on my side, then I don't want to talk to you. I'm like, I don't know if I want to tell you what side I'm on because I want you to know that I care more about knowing you than convincing you of my beliefs.
Right.
And that's like a really weird, I mean, balancing that out, especially when you're somebody who has articles written about you, it's like, how do I navigate this? I have no idea.
Yeah, you're living in a fishbowl, kind of.
Yeah. And that's why when I did kind of like sort of publicly come out with some things, I just put it on my personal blog and I'm like, this is just, if people want to talk about it, they can, but it's not because someone asked me to do this piece and I'm like using it to hype my next record or some stupid thing like that. It's like, no, I just know that there's people who might be confused and it might be helpful to know this.
Right.
And there might be someone, because I was affected by reading articles. I had courage because I saw other people doing things and I was like, you know what? I will take the risk because it's possible somebody may be encouraged.
Yeah.
And that's worth it.
I remember late.
Such a strange thing about like modern day, well, anything, but being an artist and being a person who's like trying to get stuff out there is that you do have to have like a brand, even if mm-hmm. the brand is just you and you're trying to do it as authentic as possible and have yeah. it just be an extension of your own personality. It's awkward.
It is, and you're in charge of your brand when, like, for me, I've never, as much as I hoped someday that I would hit it with like a manager or like a person, whatever, that I never did it, which was fine. And I'm glad that never happened. But it's weird because you're in charge of all of it. And it's not like someone's going, you know what, you just go play music and you just go think about lyrics and you just go read a book and make the best music you can.
Right.
It's like, well, you got to do a few things before you do that. And then you're like, but it's going to affect the music. And I think that's for me why I kept trying to figure out a way to do music for a living. Because if I could just focus, I could do so much better. And then it comes to a point where you're like, you'll never have that. You will never have enough time. You will never have the perfect room. Mm-hmm. You will never have access to what you need. You just need to get over it.
I wonder if it's just Minneapolis or just the size of our scene, but I feel like a band can get to a certain level here where you routinely can fill up like an entry sized room mm-hmm. and you get press and maybe a little airplay. You have a modest sized fan base, and it almost seems like I've talked to many artists now where they get in that routine where it's like you're kind of keeping this momentum going and you've got like a little thing going. Not to say that it's little, I mean, that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
It's an accomplishment, I think, to, you know, have a fan base. But I wonder if that traps people too, where you feel yes. like you have to keep this like kind of balls in the air a little bit, like the plates spinning.
Yes. I think in a way that's what kind of got me in the first rut, I guess, mm. because you know how to do this thing in this town, and then what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I was younger, and that's another thing that changed for me when I was like about 25, I don't know why, but I just had like mountains of confidence when I was young. Like, I remember somebody, I mean, this is like embarrassing to admit, but whatever. They were like, hey, I just heard you on The Current, oh my gosh. And I was like, what's next?
Yeah.
I was like, cool. Of course.
Duh.
Like, which it's like, I hate admitting that, but I was like, yeah, of course. Like, what? I know, because that's what I wrote that song on purpose. You know, like I purposely wrote that song and I tried hard and I had a mission statement for my band from the get-go that was write good music and perform it well. Mm-hmm. It's a good station. They're going to play it. You know, it was like this. So the first time I got play on The Current, that's how I felt. And then it was there for 8 years, never moved anywhere, which so grateful for what is here, and I feel very honored, especially now that I have more humility. Realizing that I'm not is the best thing in the world. There's a lot of work to be done, and you know, being exposed to more music, you just realize, wow, I'm not that good. That's embarrassing. I just had so much confidence when I was younger. I started sprinting, I think, you know, but I didn't realize it was a marathon.
Mm.
Get over all of these weird aspirations and then only focus on, I want to write a better song. I want to write a better song. And every day that's how you wake up and you work your job that lets you live. And I got this great job now that doesn't have I used to do construction management and all these things where my phone was always ringing, property management, my a million emails a day, like just constantly responsible for all these things. I always had at least 3 jobs because then you can take time off easier. If anyone needs a hint on how to tour, when you're only working a little bit at each job and you take a big time off, nobody cares as much.
Mm.
It's always what I was trying to do. But now I'm like, I'm not going to go on tour. I'm going to work this job, and then I'm going to do what I want on my time off.
Yeah.
And that was actually kind of life-changing, to just almost have no ambition. You know, and I said to myself, as soon as I don't have anything to say, I'm going to stop, because I don't want to become someone who's just, at least if I want to just do that, I'm going to play in my basement and not make people watch it, you know?
Right.
And I think it kind of came to that point where I'm like, I have no idea what I want to say right now. So I think I just got to stop for a second.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the person on stage playing for no reason.
Yeah.
And I used to have a huge reason, you know? It was like, I'm talking to God. I'm talking to you. This is like a freaking huge metaphysical, like real thing that I am speaking the word of God to you. That's freaking crazy. And then to have that taken away, where's the power in it? I don't know. I can't find it. I will play and try really hard when I'm in the mood, and I will play for a long time, and I will get up and think about it, and it's a real thing. But I just don't know if I'll ever be the person who's like, I hate music right now, but I gotta do it. I just gotta do it until I hate it. Like, I just don't think that is reasonable.
That sounds terrible.
I know. And that's like, sometimes I feel like that's what people tell you to do, and I'm like, no. That's not why I play music.
Right.
It doesn't mean I'm not going to try, and it doesn't mean I'm not going to work really hard and like bleed and cry into my music, but that takes a lot of freaking energy, and sometimes you need a break from it.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, our culture with work and with sports is like, you got to have something to show for it.
Mm.
You got to have something to show for it. I'm like, well, I have a great relationship with my partner. I enjoy my life. I think that's something to show for it.
One thing that I'm really interested in with this series is kind of music's role in healing and catharsis. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to know, when you go back and play the earlier stuff, which you're not going to be doing now, but when you did go back and play the earlier Zoo Animal stuff, and it was this very tumultuous time in your life that you were documenting, and then you had to go back and sing those words. What was that experience like for you emotionally, to kind of have to revisit that, like, for entertainment for people?
Well, luckily, the people that listen to Zoo Animal, I never feel like I have to be straight up entertainment. And I think that I feel very lucky, because I don't feel like when I'm playing in front of a group of people, they don't give me that vibe.
Yeah.
I do feel a lot of pressure for my banter lately. But I'm trying to ignore that, because it's fine. But I think one thing I had to do was almost disconnect and know that I was singing it for the people that were there to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I used to always like revisit where I was when I played those songs. And then I just drank my head off.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I can't just like be wasted all the time. So I'm going to need to figure out a different way to do this. And so then when I would sing the songs, it's like I was singing them caring about this group of people in front of me, helping them know they're not alone.
Mm.
Which is why I still believe in writing music like Departure, because I think it's very important to be in a room full of people and acknowledge there are some bad things. Just like how Low is the band I've seen the most in my life, and I'll always go see them because it's like, this is the world, and let's just acknowledge some other parts right now.
Yeah.
And be together in it, because I think that's important. So as time went on, they were less personal.
Mm.
Because I felt like I was oddly singing them vicariously through the people listening.
Hmm.
I'm not sure if that's the best grammatic way to put that together.
I get it.
But,
mm-hmm. I'm picking up what you're laying
down. Yeah, like the audience is singing it back to me, telling me what they're feeling.
Right.
And I don't have to feel it all from the place I wrote it from.
Right. One thing that I thought was really poignant about the last show was you ended with Muddy Water, and that song kills me.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past, when you played that, you would leave and I wouldn't see you again for the rest of that night, basically. And I could tell that it was really difficult for you to play it and have it out there. And this time you left and then you came back.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, is this like a new level? Like, have you reached a new level where you are okay with this now?
Mm-hmm.
And you can get through it and still be grounded and still be okay?
Mm-hmm. Your first interview with me, you talked about how serious I was. And I was.
Yeah.
And I didn't, when you said that, I didn't get it. And I remember reading it going, why is she talking about, I'm not a serious person. Like, I remember being kind of defensive in my head about it. Like, what does she mean I'm so serious?
Okay, in my defense.
Okay.
In that interview, you told me your band wears all black.
Right.
You don't drink before you perform because you want to be 100% in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You seem pretty serious.
No, and the truth is I was.
Yeah.
I just didn't realize it because I think partly because I was from a small town, I wasn't around a lot of performers, and I used to help my mom get prepared before she did one of her performances, which is comedy, but she's very focused beforehand, and I like saw her go through her thing, and
right.
For me it was always like the stage is sacred, right. And you better be freaking ready when it comes because I still feel this way. If you aren't interesting, if what you're doing is not important, get off the stage.
Yeah.
Like, there is, like, an element of entertainment. There's types of bands who do that, but I've never related to that. I don't have any interest in being the wedding band. Nothing wrong with a wedding band. I do think maybe if I was in one, I'd be a better musician. Because they have to learn all those covers, you know? So, with that, like, I was trying to put together the last show. And sometimes when I sing those old songs that are super religious, I really have like an interesting relationship with them in a way that I yearn for that kind of passion.
Mm.
Like I almost like miss it. I miss caring about something that much. I miss caring about something and feeling like it's life or death.
Yeah.
I live my life like that was always there. And so I can still sing those songs even though I don't believe the words, and I still feel it because I'm like, that is so good. Like, for someone to be able to feel that is amazing. So when I was putting the set list together for the last show, people always ask me to play Muddy Bloody, and I'm like, no way. Like, it was always off the table. I'm not going to play that song because the truth is, that wasn't an act. I was crying every time I finished playing that song.
Yeah.
And these days, if you have that kind of performance, Portlandia is going to do a skit and make fun of you. You know what I mean? And that's how it feels these days. Like, like I didn't know that when I was young. I didn't know that like as soon as you become this thing that's passionate, someone's going to make fun of you for it. Just our culture is, and I'm guilty of it too. I love Portlandia, but like especially our age group, when someone really cares about something and is passionate, there's going to be like a parody of it.
Yeah.
And then how is that person supposed to feel about what they do?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to go do that again then. Like, that was funny, you know? but now I don't want to do it. I wanted to play Muddy Bloody. I know I'll never play it again. It doesn't have control over me. I still can be there in that song, and also I am okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was why I wanted to play it, was like, this is part of me and part of other people. But it was interesting to be able to play it, go backstage, take a breath, and then go finish. Is when I can actually really feel as strongly as I want to and not have to feel crazy, because that's not appropriate. Like, having that much emotion in any other context is pretty much not accepted.
Right.
And not that I was ever, you know, told not to or something. But I grew up in the church, and I grew up, like, singing and people with their hands raised, people crying, and, like, you know, that, like, I played drums in that revival band, and you know, we'd play music for 2 hours. I'm crying behind the drum set, people are getting saved. The guy that was the leader, he played keyboards, and we had such a strong, like, he just barely moved and I knew what he wanted, and it's like, I'm, you know, my dynamics are literally affecting people's emotions.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt too. I wasn't purposefully trying to manipulate people. I was just like, oh my gosh, this is actually portraying what I'm feeling.
Mm.
And that is an incredible feeling.
Yeah. That's, I mean, my favorite moments in music are those things that you can't even really explain. Mm-hmm. It's like your chest starts to burn, and like I get all tingly and like feel like I have tunnel vision all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. It's just like, what's happening?
I know. Yeah. And I feel, I mean, I don't only feel that when I'm playing music. Like, I mean, like I've said, I mean, low, and like when I go see classical music perform live, and Monday nights at Ice House when like a band just hits it, especially because those nights usually, like when they're just kind of a people put together, it's not really planned. Sometimes they just hit it, and what you're like, I can tell that they're feeling this, because yeah, they're like, oh my gosh, this is happening. Like, the element of surprise hits the musicians as well, and everybody's feeling it, and then it's over, and then you're all going, what was that? It wasn't us. Yeah. I think that's something about music that helps me, because I had a otherworldly being, and I feel like I didn't totally lose that, because music's one of those things that you're like, that wasn't us.
Yeah.
That was something bigger than the individuals in this room, and that is really encouraging.
That is Holly Hansen, formerly known as the frontwoman of Zoo Animal, now a solo artist in her own right. Speaking of Holly doing her own thing, a gig to mention, she's going to be at the Astor Cafe later this month, January 24th. Not performing Zoo Animal music, not performing her own music even, she's going to be doing a tribute to PJ Harvey. It's going to be fantastic. You can head over to theastercafe.com for more information about that. Don't forget, you can find all of the previous OK Show episodes over at thecurrent.org, as well as on iTunes, where you can subscribe to the podcast and get a new one every Wednesday. Next week, something new and different. I'm going to be talking to a fellow music critic here in town, Ali Alabadi. Ali's been writing about music for a long time. We're going to talk about his career as a critic and as a one-time radio DJ over at Radio K, his experiences in the hip-hop community here, and his unique experiences navigating the scene as an Arab American and as a Muslim. Very interesting conversation, and I'm looking forward to sharing that one with you. I'm your host, Andrea Swenson. This is The OK Show, a podcast brought to you by The Current. And until next time, it's going to be okay.